Hi, welcome to a Friday edition of the Two of the First podcast. I'm Ryan Malgi. Thanks for checking us out. Hope you are enjoying the early action at the BMW PGA Championship and the weather-plagued Sanderson Farms Championship on the PGA Tour. We've got a lot to talk about. We've got two stories for you, and one of those stories actually includes a guest. So we have our first guest on today's podcast. Bodo Sieber is the chief executive of a company called Tag Marshall. And we primed this a little bit earlier in the week. Tag Marshall is working with the European Tour to implement their new pace of play initiative. And part of that is a big measurement component. And Tag Marshall works with some of the highest end resorts and golf facilities in the world to track pace of play and to help those properties move people around the golf course better and more efficiently. And now they're using that technology with the European Tour to do the very same. So we had a conversation just a little while ago that I recorded from him all the way in South Africa to me here in DC. And we talk about the technology and what they're doing with the European Tour. It was a really interesting conversation. So hopefully you'll enjoy hearing it. I wanted to talk a little bit about our first story today, which is Victor Hovland. We've talked about Victor Hovland a fair amount on social media, on a website, pretty much anywhere that we could talk about Victor Hovland on our fantasy picks. He has been excellent. He has been awesome on Sundays on the PGA Tour. He continues to grind out final rounds in a way that maybe is Luke Donald or Rory McIlroy-esque, where it just seems like out of nowhere he backdoors a top 10 or top 15 with a good final round after playing somewhat mediocre golf all the way through the week. And that has netted him an incredible streak that where right now he has shot 18 consecutive rounds in the 60s between the PGA Tour and his first round as a professional on the European Tour yesterday in the BMW PGA Championship. He shot a 69. He has 18 consecutive rounds in the 60s. That is an absurd record. If you include the PGA, if you exclude the European Tour, he's at 17. He's basically at the existing known record mark in my lifetime for consecutive rounds in the 60s. Now, I realize he hasn't played the most difficult set of courses since turning professional, right? I mean, you play a couple events on the Korn Ferry Finals, you played Greenbrier, you played 3M, you played tournaments where the courses were very gettable and there weren't conditions such that shooting around in the 60s was all that big of a deal until this week. Because I would argue that Wentworth Club, for as gettable as it is, also can come up and bite you and get you around 70, 71, 72, even if you played okay. That happened to Paul Casey yesterday and got him on 18. But if you look at Hovland, his rounds are just smoothly in the 60s. Now, yesterday he had to actually kind of pull one out. If you look at his scorecard yesterday from the European Tour, he had to go birdie-birdie to finish it off to save his streak. So he was at one under par going to the back-to-back par five finish at Wentworth. He birdied both holes to save his skin and to get in with a 69. Today, so far when we're recording this, he's only halfway through the round, so he's one under, so he's going to have to do same thing. He's going to have to finish strong and capitalize on the three par fives on the back at Wentworth. It's just what he's going to have to do. It's a 35-37 golf course. So when you go out in the front, really everyone's trying to target the fifth hole or the fourth hole. It's the only par five on the front. And then anything else that you can get is kind of a bit of a bonus. There are a couple of gettable short par fours on the back, on the front side at six and seven. They're under 390 yards. I would argue the eight is somewhat gettable, but that is actually kind of a difficult hole. Nine's gettable, but you really look to the back seven holes on the golf course because you have three par fives to close out. And then you have a pretty simple 14th hole, which is 163 meters, 178-ish yards. So you're not looking at long golf holes on this course. So I would expect, barring some kind of horrible error, we're going to get to a 19th consecutive round for Hovland in the 60s. And there has been some interesting commentary. I realize this is the time of year no one really cares about golf, but some interesting commentary about whether that means anything. Because obviously Hovland has not played many difficult golf courses at this point. He's just into his professional career. He also has not won yet. I don't mean that as a pejorative, but shooting four rounds in the 60s four consecutive times and then tacking on the bookends, that has not netted him a victory. So shooting four rounds in the 60s doesn't really amount to all that much, but it's still pretty incredible. I mean, he tied the PGA Tour record with that 64 to close at the Greenbrier. So the next round he shoots in the 60s, if he does on the PGA Tour, will be the record. He will have that record. Now, Tony Finau had the record previously at 16. A couple of others had a piece of it. But at 17 already, that's pretty incredible. And then throwing this one on the European Tour. And so Rex Hoggard, who's over at the BMW PGA for Golf Channel, asked Hovland if he's kind of thought about this streak. And Hovland said, no, not really. Quote, I don't think people notice that. So the streak isn't maybe as long as people think it is. But no, I didn't really think about that. And I don't know that he's necessarily thinking about that whenever he plays. He's just trying to play one shot at a time, just like any other person would. And I still find it incredible, though, that you're coming out from school. You're coming out from being an amateur player. And you're doing so well out the gate. And I know that he's part of this class of guys with Colin Morikawa and Matthew Wolf. Those guys won out the gate. Hovland, I could argue, has been a little bit more consistent. Maybe Morikawa is the best of the three so far. But they follow in the footsteps of someone like Jon Rahm, who came out a couple of years ago, tore up the place, became a top 10 player very quickly, and has maintained it, and actually right now has the lead at the BMW PGA Championship in his first start at Wentworth. So you can kind of see the trajectory that maybe we're going on, where players who come out of collegiate golf, who are long hitters, who have accomplished a lot, who are very confident, and Tiger has talked about this a little bit too, where they come out and try to get on the PGA Tour, they're not afraid to shoot in the 60s. They're comfortable shooting that. They're comfortable putting up a good round and being aggressive and not playing for pars and playing to their spots and doing all the stuff that maybe people weren't as seasoned at when they were younger in the 90s. And part of that is a function of data. We have so much more data now that players know how to play golf. They know their tendencies. They know what they do. And then they know how to marry that with a golf course a little bit better so that they can make intelligent decisions, so that they don't needlessly go at flags. They go at the right ones. They know how to play. I mean, there's just so much out there that makes these guys better when they turn pro because they've had it. They've been able to use it in AJGA events or international competition or high-level amateur events, collegiate events, whatever it is, major championships even for some of these guys. And I think that that makes them super confident coming out, and it makes them a threat because they don't have scar tissue. They don't have a down period. They haven't dealt with the grind that it is to play professional golf for a whole year yet. They're coming out happy, trying to make money, trying to justify either turning pro early or their big contract or whatever, and they can do it. Now, the interesting thing is going to be if this continues. I mean, Matt Wolf slowed down a little bit. Colin Morikawa played pretty well in the playoffs. Victor Hovland is still very much hungry because he's still trying to kind of prove himself a little bit in this European Tour start. Got his PGA Tour card through the Korn Ferry Tour Finals. But I'm very curious what these guys will be doing this time next year. Will they still be playing really well? Will they be like a Jon Rahm who's continuously moving up as he matures? I mean, he's getting better as a golfer, getting hopefully a little bit less emotional on the downside, and he's kind of figuring his way around to golf courses and events that work well for him so he can post the most positive results possible. Finally doing well in major championships, it's starting to kind of pile up for him. So will we be talking a year from now about Wolf, Morikawa, and Hovland, any of them contending in majors or winning majors or doing something really tremendous like that? Or will we look at them like a Cameron Champ who won last year at the Sanderson Farms and then got hurt a little bit but did basically nothing for the next calendar year? I'm that's a long-term trend I'm curious about in golf. But even while it's still going on, this streak from Hovland, which again is at 18 consecutive rounds in the 60s, could get to 19 today. That's just impressive to watch. All right, before we get to our guest, Bodo Sieber, I want to tell you about our friends at ShotScope. We've been using them all year to track our game. We get data, just like Tag Marshall gets data about pace of play and how people move around a golf course. I get data from ShotScope about how I move around the golf course, where I hit shots, my tendencies, how far I hit the club, every club in my bag, and it's easy to use by using sensors that you screw into the butt end of your grips, and you connect that to a GPS watch, which is a fully functioning GPS watch that sits on your wrist and tracks your shots. And then after your round, you get the data mapped on the golf course that you played, and you get strokes gained data and all kinds of other goodies to help you make a plan to be a better player. So head over to ShotScope.com, find out more about the platform. It's $199 to get in. There are no annual platform fees. One of the best things about ShotScope, once you're in, you get your data and you keep your data. So head over to ShotScope.com and find out more. All right, our guest today is Bodo Sieber, who is the chief executive at Tag Marshall, which is a company that has worked with scores of resorts and private clubs and properties around the world, that they have a product designed to get people moving around the golf course better, whether that's walking, whether that's riding, whether that's with a caddy or without. They have technology that allows course operators to track players, how they move around the golf course, and their efficiency. And that means they can have data at their fingertips to help these operators make better decisions about pace of play and help players move around a little bit better. Now they've engaged with the European Tour, and they're working with them on their pace of play initiative, which started rolling out a couple of weeks ago with a test event on the European Challenge Tour. But this week is the first event of using it on the European Tour. So at a handful of holes, there are monitors available to the players that they can see where they are on the golf course relative to other groups. They can see who's slow, who's fast, who's moving, who's not. And that's all being tracked by using GPS units attached to a bag in the group, each threesome. So it's really interesting data. It's very easy to collect. It's connected to the European Tour officials, who are also wearing tags. So everyone involved with the event knows where rules officials are, where everyone who's going to be on the course playing or ruling is going to be. And the hope is that by collecting this data and getting a sense of how players move around over these next coming weeks, by the time they get into 2020, they'll have a full deployment they can take with them every week and use on the European Tour. So I wanted to talk to Bodo about his system, his work with the European Tour. I think it's fascinating, and I think it's a step that's a big insight into, hopefully will become a big insight into how professional players move around a golf course week after week, their tendencies, and what that can mean for the European Tour once armed with data, what they can do with it to improve pairings, improve spacing, and improve the overall product that you and I watch every single week. So here's our interview with Bodo.
Bodo, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Can you give us a sense of how everything kind of came together with the European Tour and working with them on this pace of play initiative that's going to be really put into place a little bit this week as a bit of a trial program and then in full force for next season?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan, for having me, and very excited to share a bit more about this initiative. So we've been working with a number of tours and PGA sections on events over the last 18 months, and the European Tour is really the first major tour that has now taken the step forward, and they're used to being at the vanguard of things and also driving innovation. So they were very excited to engage with us and look at our system as an option to extend their initiative that they've been driving and that they're committed to. So we've been engaging with them over the last couple of months, and we've had a recent European Challenge Tour event about 2 weeks ago in France. So it was our first pilot that we did, and now we're at Wentworth this weekend for the BMW Champs. So very exciting for them to have a first go at managing their field and their players with our system, and obviously for us to expose what we can do to them.
So Tag Marshall are the experts in this area. You guys work with resorts all around the world. You work with various properties that are trying to keep just the average golfer like you and me on time, on pace, moving around efficiently. How do the European Tour use your knowledge from how the average person golfs, how the average person moves around the golf course, as well what they already potentially have, and how did that come together to create the system so that it works for the players, but it also works for the officials?
Okay, so it's a slightly different perspective and directive that we have in the operational space, because when we work with the operators, you mentioned, we are very busy adding value to a lot of private clubs, but also resorts, and including 25 of the top 100 U.S. golf clubs, and that's your Whistling Straits, Erin Hills, the National Golf Links. There's many, many of them that are household names, and are the goal for us and the goal for the operators is to provide the best possible player experience. And they know, and as us, the USGA, and generally in the industry, it's well known that pace and flow of play is a huge experience opportunity for the golfer. So if it's done well, it's something that adds a lot of value to the golfer. If it's done badly, it's something that is a real detractor for golfers. And what our system does is we've created an efficiency system, optimization system around it that provides not only the result that the course is after in terms of providing the best possible experience, but also it provides a significant revenue opportunities for the course in line with TC optimization, getting more capacity out, ensuring that players come back because they've had a great time, and also allowing for them, and by managing their time well, more time in their food and beverage and pro shop, which obviously adds revenue to the course. So there's a huge commercial interest from the courses and from the operators to do that. So we have in this space tracked over 8 million rounds of golf, and obviously have gathered a lot of knowledge and a lot of data insights and trends. That is now something that we're bringing into the tournament space as well. And I mean, that's it. The European Tour and all the tours, they're experts in their own right. And obviously they've done tournaments and management of elite events for a long time. So we are merely not giving them a tool so they can add another set of data to what they already do. And so basically what we've done is we've perfected our system, and it comes in various shapes in the operational space, and then have taken it into the tour space because there was a demand for it from tour operators that have come to us and said, hey, this would be a great fit for us as well. Can't you give us something that's more lightweight that we can take from tournament to tournament? So that's what we developed. And obviously there's a lot of data learning and the ins and outs of interval management, goal time management, and looking at hotspots on a course, how do the holes perform, what are the key crunch times in the day, what are key risk times and areas on the course that we need to keep an eye on, and that obviously transcends into live management, because once you've got real line of sight and you've got smart algorithms that show you if there's a group that's got a negative trend, they're falling out of position, then you can get somebody onto them to support them much quicker than if you were to look for gaps in the field just by visual and sort of traditional martial methods. So that is how we've taken that operational system into the tournament space, and it's something that's been working really successfully.
For a resort or a club that's implementing Tag Marshall, they're static. They're the same property every day. And the European Tour and professional tours are obviously different. They move around every week, and they may not always play the same set of courses even in the course of a year, even returning to the same market. So for someone like the European Tour, what is the challenge in trying to figure out data and trends that first year going around to different places that they may be familiar with playing, but they may not be familiar with in seeing player data and how quickly players move around that property during a tournament?
Yeah, that's a great question. So just to quickly give you some insight as to how we do it. So generally we work with an operator over a longer period of time. So that's normally 3 years. And obviously there's a lot of optimization that we can empower them to do and that we can help them do over the period. So in the tournament space, as you're saying, they're hopping from one location to the next week on week, that requires a bit more of a lightweight setup. So what we can help them with is optimizing their own operations with regards to how they run the tournament. So there's a certain understanding in what to expect when you've got a certain weather or climate conditions, certain field size, certain play formats that you're playing, and if you're gathering data around this, then obviously you can have a more predictive way of forecasting what to expect at a new location. And then also there's generally trends as to how the first day maps out versus the second versus the third day and the last day, if there is a fourth day. And the more data you gather, the better you can now go and control the variables that are in play. And one of the things that where TagMarsh is really good is mapping player data over time. So if you have certain tour players that play week in, week out, and obviously there's some qualifiers that come that you've got less data on, but you certainly over the period of the tour gather a lot of data on players as well. So you would then generally know the performance of players, and that can also inform how they're grouped, for instance, or what tee times they get allocated to potentially start a day or come through a bit later. Because that has an impact on the, yeah, how the day performs potentially. So there's a lot of data opportunities that once the data is logged and analyzed well, that the tours have got access to.
Do you anticipate the European Tour using TagMarsh data to then inform how they make pairings on Thursday and Friday, the first two rounds of a tournament, trying to pair maybe quicker players with slower players so that there's kind of some evening out, or do you expect that they will just kind of initially use the data in enforcing pace of play, but maybe not setting up a faster pace of play?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this is really, I mean, for us, it's and for the tour as well, it's a longer term play. So they really want to get to terms with the opportunity and one of the key things that they want to get is obviously player buy-in as well, and a lot of players have been very outspoken that they really welcome this initiative. I don't think that there will be any quick adjustments to how things get managed right now. It's just the day-to-day of the operation can be run more efficiently. And to give you another example, one of the things that our system can facilitate is if there's a rules query and on any given day, there might be 30, 40, or 50 of them, our system can make that just a little bit more efficient by the player or one of the scorers requesting a rules official via the push of a button. And then because tournament management knows where the rules officials are because they're also tagged and we know where they are on the live map, they can then allocate a person to get to a ruling more quickly than if they first have to find out where are they right now and who's the closest. So it's those little things that add efficiencies. And we don't expect there to be any big, certainly not any rule or application change to the tour. They first need to get a really good feel for the playing field and you know, gather data over time, and then they can make really educated decisions on how they want to make adjustments going forward.
There seems to be this conversation among the outspoken players who are willing to point the finger at others about pace of play. And then those who are kind of fingered and mentioned as those who might be slower seem to suggest there are two different things going on, that how the round unfolds in terms of every component of the round, how quickly you walk to the ball, how quickly you play your shot, distance between holes, spacing, all of that. They view it as a total package. And the players who are kind of making the allegations talk more specifically about how long it takes a player to hit a shot when it is their turn. So from the data that you have collected from amateurs and professionals, what really bogs down the pace of play on a golf course and during a round?
That is a great question. So the principal area where we're seeing players needing to wait is generally on the tee. So you can see that if a course is jammed and if a course is very busy, that is because we generally zone a hole into multiple zones. And the par three would have less zones than the par five. So we would know how much time does each playing group spend in each zone. And what we can very clearly see is that the most wait time happens on the tee. So that means I'm needing to wait for the group in front of me to get out of the way so I can play my tee shot. So this is generally a trend that we're seeing when the rounds get slower. This is where the impact happens. Now, there is a rule for virtually everything in golf, but when it comes to timing play, the one thing that the rules official currently do is once they put a player on the clock, he's got a certain amount of seconds to play their shot. And this is something that is, and obviously if you're the first to play, then you've got a little bit more time than the second, because as player number two or three, you've got a bit more time to work out what you're going to do, and you know about what your ball lie is. So there is a little bit of interpretation that comes into play here, and obviously one of the things that doesn't get considered generally when it comes to timing is how do we transition from the tee onto the fairway, from our shot two to our shot three, from the fairway onto the green, how quickly do we move, and also what do we do in between touching the club and getting ready to playing our shots. So somebody that is defending their routine might say, well, I'm only taking 30 seconds to play my shot from when I'm grabbing my club to when I'm actually hitting my shot. But what have you done in the lead up? You know, have you walked it out? Have you paced it out? Have you looked at it from 15 angles? Because that is not really taken into account when it comes to your timing. What the tour is doing, they obviously have an interval of how they're sending out playing groups. And they're trying to keep what they call the gap time, which is that time between the groups, accurate, and it's supposed to stay like that throughout the day. And that's not always possible, because sometimes there's a rules query that takes a bit of time, or sometimes a player just has made life very difficult for themselves and they need to get out of a sticky situation, or they've got a few extra shots to play. So some time that they need to spend additionally. But one of the things that is great now with the system that the European Tour is deploying is that there's information available to the player. So on every other hole, there's a display that shows the group that's coming in what their current status is versus the pace grid, versus where they are supposed to be in terms of gap time, and in terms of where they're supposed to be in terms of versus the starting grid. So it calculates the difference between the two, and then slips it out so they would know, okay, we're a minute ahead, we're 3 minutes behind. They can be more self-aware in their management. And also when they're behind, they can really at that point expect the rules officials to start helping them get back in position and also enforcing the pace. So it adds to the player awareness, and that helps with the self-management a bit better. And we found that one of the key issues in the amateur game is just player awareness. And like I said initially, pace is such a huge emotional topic in golf. It's something that players, depending on how it's managed, get very defensive about. And the standard response is, it's not us, it's the guys in front of us. That is something that any golf manager has heard a million times. And that is a difficult thing to manage with players if you don't have data. But the moment you have data, and the moment you can show the group, hey guys, you are here, you're holding up two groups behind you, and there's a gap widening with the group in front of you, then that is a conversation that is non-confrontational, and it's based on facts, and there's no opinion at play, and that makes things much easier. And this is something where the tour is also going to find the playing field leveling a lot, because once there's data in play, and once there's data on every single round, on every single hole, and every single group throughout the day that can be tracked, that can be revisited at the end of the day, at the end of the tournament, it makes all these conversations so much easier, because now they're based on fact and there's no opinions that get in the way. And that also will mean, hopefully, that in the future, some of those emotional conversations that happen on social media between certain players will calm down a bit, because they all know what the lay of the land is.
All right, last question for you, and that is, obviously, the European Tour, a golf fan, the players can benefit from this relationship, but how does Tag Marshall get better as a result of this relationship with the European Tour and potentially other professional tours?
Well, how does Tag Marshall get better? So one of the things that we always do is, because while we are data specialists and we are system specialists, there are people out there who have got much more experience in managing golf operations, and they've got much more experience in managing golf tournaments. So we always look to learn from them and learn from the market so that we can add more value to them. So we're very excited about this relationship with the tours, because they're really telling us what's great and what we can do better. So there's a constant feedback loop. And So that is something that is certainly going to help us. But just being at Wentworth now this week has been tremendous for our team that's on site, because there's a lot of, I mean, there's a pro-am event alongside it. Obviously, this is the most prestigious non-major in the UK. So there's a lot of local interest and a lot of local clubs have come and also looked at the system. So we're expecting excited conversations with clubs and operators and other tours as well that have never been aware of us to come on the back of this initiative, which is obviously great for us as well.
Well, Bodo, thanks so much for taking the time with us. We really appreciate it. Congrats on this relationship. We're looking forward to learning more as the data starts to trickle in and we find out more about it. Thanks so much for informing us about Tag Marshall.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate the time and the great questions you asked me.
Thanks again to Bodo Seaver for joining us. Very kind of him to join us all the way from South Africa. I believe it was something like, it was 9:30 when we finished AM, so it was 3:30 PM in South Africa when we wrapped up, so 6 hours ahead. Very kind of him to join us before Beer 30 over there. So we appreciate it. On Monday, we will recap the two biggest tournaments of the week, the BMW PGA Championship and the Sanderson Farms, which hopefully does not go to a Monday finish. But if it does, we will be there to set the primer for you for that final round. Please give us a 5-star review if you listen to us through iTunes. Helps us reach more people, or the Apple Podcasts app for that matter. And we will see you on Monday.